Is this thing on? Hello, hello. What is up, you guys? You are listening to Grow with Ro. I am your host, Ramana. And on this show, we have discussions that help you feel better, think better, do better, and get you from where you are to where you want to be. So let's get into it. Hello, and welcome to part two of my conversation with CT. So on last week's episode, if you didn't get a chance to listen to it yet, CT had gotten fairly vulnerable about the reality of starting his health journey at 500 pounds and how the world doesn't necessarily offer the resources to allow for people in that weight class to even begin to make change. So go back, listen to that to get context for today's episode. And then on today's episode, we dive into what it means to be an empath and how that has shaped CT's experiences and relationships, why and how he decided to give up alcohol, how he has rebuilt his community as an adult, and so much more. So with that being said, here is part two, and enjoy.
But let's see, my out of body. Everyone talks about your life flashing before your eyes. And for me, it did. But if I were to tell you to think about your favorite movie, for me, it's Lord of the Rings, all three, because it should be one movie because it's one book. But think about your favorite movie. And you think about it, you're not thinking, okay, at the beginning, you know, Frodo's there and the wizard shows up and there's this ring and then he meets with a fellowship and then they go to Middle Earth and they do this and this and this. That's not what you think about. When you think about your favorite movie, you think about the theme. You think about the feeling you had when you first saw the bad guy, you know, have a small victory. The feeling you had when the male kisses the female lead, the feeling you had when they lost whatever they lost in their journey. That's what you're thinking about, probably. You're thinking about the themes, the emotions. And for me, it was actually, I have like a minor case of things called synesthesia, where like colors creep in for smells and you have like crossing over of perception and it's weird. But for me, I got a lot of color feel in my experience. It was a lot of like warm.
Just throw that in there. No one knows at all what you're talking about. And you're just like, oh yeah, no worries, casual.
I'm a strange individual who I have hyperactive sensory disorder. I have synesthesia and I'm an empath, which we'll talk about. But so I felt a lot of oranges and yellows, a lot of warm colors, which is just kind of what I felt. I could see some of the things going on. And then I got pulled back into my body because they gave me this medicine and I woke up and I was alive again.
Damn, that's wild. Yeah, so wait, tell me about this synesthesia.
So, I mean, while we're looking, you can look up the definition so we don't misspeak, but it's like, from what I understand, it's like the...
When your brain routes sensory information through multiple unrelated senses, causing you to experience more than one sense simultaneously. But isn't that... We all do that. Some examples include tasting words. Oh, okay. I'm like, wait, don't do that. Tasting words or linking colors to numbers and letters. Oh my gosh. So you must have you done one of those tests where it's just like a brain teaser and they'll say it'll be like the number 7, but it'll be a green and then it'll be a different number with a different color and you're just supposed to say the color, not the number? Have you tried that? It is really tough because obviously, yeah, you're having to like combat, am I talking number or am I talking color?
So I haven't done that test, but I do. There was a song growing up called Smell the Color 9, and I always thought it's a ridiculous song, but for me, I was like, no, I get it. So yeah, it's a weird thing of like, my mom is very into color theory. She's an artist. She's a professional artist. She's a teacher now. And she always taught us like different colors inspire different emotions, like red inspires passion, yellow inspires happiness, blue is calm. You know, if you're into red light therapy versus blue light at night, like those colors actually matter to your body processes. Colors matter, but for me, it's always just been second nature of like, if I'm feeling good, I get this sense of a yellow, like a warm yellow. It's not just, I feel good, I smell something good. Everything's related to me. It's very, I don't know, for people that don't understand, it may sound like gobbledygook and weird, but for me, it's just the way it is.
But do you like see yellow? Like if you're looking at, let's say you associate like this book and or purple, right? This book is purple. Maybe your brain has your brain processed purple as the smell of an apple.
So there's a lot about mnemonics that we're taught as a kid. Like, you know, you're taught gyms use colors all the time for weights, like gray, blue, red, black. Like, we associate colors with that. And so, like, people do try to follow these elements of synesthesia even without knowing what it is, because they recognize, like, using color coding in your calendar, these kind of things, like associating colors with memories and colors with smells, it works. Olfactory is actually most strong, the smell, the sense of smell. But for me, it's not just the sense of smell that I get. It's a sense of, like, you get comfort, you get warmth. It's yellow, it's gold. It's, if it's clear, if it's smooth, for me, it's blue. It's this easy road. If it's purple, it's like this, like, proud, like, I don't know. And, like, for me, it's just how I, yeah, it's the color association, but then on top of me, it's become more. And it's how I associate in my brain. It's how I categorize things in my brain. Nonetheless, all of that is to say, synesthesia, it exists. There are a lot of weird things you'll find out about me. I also have sensate moments. It's this phenomena that you and another individual or multiple individuals can have, like, a shared memory, shared dream, shared experience. Twin phenomena is another kind of version of sensate. Like, you know, you hurt one twin and the other one feels it. I've actually had a sensate phenomenon with multiple people across the world. So I've had this situation where I was dreaming and I woke up and I texted this girl and she was like, I had the same dream. Weirdly enough, things happen. I am a firm believer in science. I am a firm believer in the real, but I also believe that things happen outside of our control and understanding. That's what makes me believe in higher power. It's part of what makes me believe in higher power. There is stuff out there we can't explain, and we try and put boxes around it, and we try and scientifically understand it, and not everything I really is possible to fully understand. Now we'll go back to your original question. I am on my eighth life, and through that, I have experienced a lot. I've touched on the afterlife a lot. I've been there. I've seen it. I've flirted with it, if you will, but I feel like God has a plan for me. I feel like God put me here for a reason. I don't know what that reason is, but all in, I felt peace when I was in my out of body. And I came back and now I'm realizing everything I do now is just gravy. Like, I've lived a great life. I have 8 nephews and nieces, also known as nibblings, if you're ever curious. So you don't have to say nephews and nieces. You can just say nibblings. That's a kid of your sibling. But I have 8 nibblings that call me Funkle. I have wonderful people in my life that I've shared love with. And I really looked at it and I was like, I'm good. If I had gone, I'd be in heaven and I'd be good.
I love that. Let's go into the empathy stuff. So I have heard you talk about empathy and being an empath quite a few times now, not only today, but obviously in conversation together. And so I just want to learn more from you about what that even means. And if that's something in my ignorant brain here is like, is that something that you feel is like a personality trait that's developed, or that one is like born with, or if it is something that's a quality that's developed maybe as a self-protection mechanism from childhood. I just don't really know much about it. So apart from it kind of being a buzzword, you know, no disrespect at all. That's just like, literally, I'm just like, dude, I have no clue what's happening.
So I'll preface anything I'm about to say with, I was an engineer and a math major, not a psychology major, not a physiology major, didn't study the brain, didn't study any of that. So all of this is just me. And if you disagree, throw it in the comments and let's have a conversation. But empath has become a buzzword recently. There's a lot of talk of EQ versus IQ versus all these other Qs. Gut quotient's another one that I just learned about recently. It's a fun one. But your emotional quotient, your EQ, is your ability to understand situations more than black and white, to understand the reasons behind, to understand the motivations behind. If someone says, you know, I did this, IQ would be able to process that and understand what it means. Like, okay, they brought the groceries in. With my intelligence, I now know I don't need to go get the groceries out of the car because they're in. But EQ is looking at that and saying, okay, is this person happy or sad that they brought the groceries in alone? Did I support them in that? Should I have supported them in that? You know, are they mad at me or are they mad at anyone? And EQ is understanding the whole context of that statement, I brought the groceries in. And EQ leads towards this empathy, this level of empathetic view of life. So you have sympathy and you have empathy.
Everyone's always confused about these. I find when people talk about them, they'll always say both. They're like, I can sympathize or I mean even empathize because no one knows what's what. So why don't we go ahead and explain to people? I think empathize is I can put myself in your shoes and feel what that must have been like, right? Versus sympathize is more from the external, like, I feel for you, that sucks, or that must suck, that kind of thing.
So according to betterup.com, it says empathy involves feeling what someone else feels while sympathy doesn't. And so empathy is putting yourself in that person's shoes, hence my whole Instagram profile and my thought. But when I say I'm an empath, growing up, I've always been able to feel like as if I was an X-Men or a mutant of some sort, but like feel this energy from people. Not just understand that there's energy, but actually feel it. This whole like, oh, your aura is a golden aura or a pink aura. Like, I actually can feel these things. And like, it's not with everyone. It's not all the time. But like, it's a lot of the time. And not just being able to feel it, but also the ability to see someone who's sad and to recognize this person's sad. But then you take it a step further. And it's the ability to understand that not everyone who's sad wants the same thing. Some people want distraction. They want to laugh and forget about the sadness. Some people want someone else to be sad with them. They want to sit in misery and just cry. A lot of women complain because men try and fix everything, when sometimes all they want is someone to just be sad with them. They want someone to sit there and just say, this sucks. Let's commiserate. There's another side of, let's fix this. Let's make you unsad. What would make you unsad? And there's different approaches to every person, and each person can have multiple approaches in the different situations. My statement of I'm an empath is the ability to see that, to feel it, and to do it without asking. It's why I connect better with women than men. Men want to fix everything with a hammer. Everything looks like a nail. Women want to open their tool case and understand, why is this nail here? What is this nail? What is it made of? Why is it stuck in this wood? Should we pull it out or should we push it in? You know, you've got to actually look at the nail and the situation that the nail's in. And I have this weird ability to be able to sit down with someone and just feel it. This person wants me to be sad with them and just be sad with them. Or this person wants me to get mad about it for them. This person wants me to fix it for them. This person wants me to tell them how to fix it for themselves. This person wants me to distract them. Whatever it is, somehow I can generally feel what they need and give them that.
Like a shapeshifter. I think that's an incredible quality. I'm sure that that can often be exhausting, but also, do you lose yourself ever in that? Like, I think in conversation with Ryan, empathy is something I've really had to work on, because I am very much like a drill sergeant kind of, but it's only because I've, over the last few years, a lot of the personal development content that I've consumed has been men. And I realized recently that that's because they're talking to other men, right? And so I'm over here being like, what do you mean? Like, get up, don't be lazy, like, because that works for me. But I've had to practice empathy and understanding, like, to your point, that not everybody wants that approach, right? Different people respond to different things. But in that being said, you can lose yourself, because are you not constantly giving the other person maybe what they want instead of what you want to give? How do you balance that?
On one side of that balance, Uncle Ben Parker once said, with great power comes great responsibility. He told Peter Parker this as Peter became Spider-Man, one of everyone's favorite superheroes ever. And I think it's very true. Not to say I'm a superhero. I wish I could climb walls and shoot webs, but I can't. But I say that because each of us is a superhero in and of ourselves. Whatever your power is, it's there. And with whatever power that is comes responsibility. The fact that there are people that are beyond genius smart out there and they don't use it at all. And so they're dwindled that power. There are people who are physically strong and all they do is lift a piece of metal up and then put it back down on the floor. There's so many better things we can be doing. We could be supporting others. We could be giving up, or we could be teaching others how to get there. For me, The dark side of this one is I'm actually very easily, I'm able to convince people to do things that I want very easily. It's like a manipulation.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, manipulate?
It is a manipulation. I've realized that. And I often say that, like, a lot of men have an innate ability to gaslight. I'm very good at it if I really wanted to. I recognize that. And I've had to rein that in. Because getting what you want through manipulation is not really what you want. You may get the result, but the result is tainted. And I've seen that professionally. I won't mention names or dates, but professionally, somebody aggravated me once because they messed with one of my teammates. And I'm very much, I recognize I was kind of a bully in middle school, but I was a bully of bullies. Somebody would bully my friend and I would ruin their life because that's just the way it is. Stand up for the smaller person. And my friend got professionally bullied. So I made it my mission to make this person's professional life harder. And so I did. I manipulated our teammates to isolate them from invites. I manipulated the events that I was planning from things that this person enjoyed and actually did things they didn't like. After about 3 weeks, my lead came to me and was like, I don't know what you're doing, but stop. I recognize what happened. I know why you're doing it, but stop. That person came to me crying. They don't know why people don't like them anymore. They were very, very, very sad and professionally depressed. All because of things that I was doing very actively through this power that I have. And I recognize that people are going to be like, oh, that's just you being manipulative and all that. True. But like, it takes a lot to be that manipulative to a large group of people. Because each person has to be tweaked different ways. Everyone has to have their own little like valve changed or tweaked or whatever emotional thing stroked so that they feel like that decision is their decision. So we can all work collectively for the common goal of ruining this person's life. And I did that. And I've done it several times through college and everything else. And I realize now that I can't do that. It's horrible. And so I use my power for good. I be there for people. I try and listen to people. And yes, it's exhausting. It's exhausting as hell. But once again, I believe I have a reason I'm still on this earth. And outside of, obviously my cat is a big reason. I gotta be able to feed her. But like outside of that, I feel like God put me on this planet to do things. And I feel if I'm not doing things, I am wasting that talent.
So is it separate from like a people pleasing thing? Cause I think what comes to mind is more if I'm like trying to imagine this, like you say this person is upset and you know that they probably want you to ask them or to fix the problem, let's say, right? Or maybe to okay. Men in relationships, for example, right? There's a time for the man to commiserate and to be there. And there is a time when a woman has kind of pushed that boundary already enough, has been whining about the same thing. They've already commiserated about it for 3 weeks now. And now it's time to put the shoe down and put the foot down, not just the shoe, put the whole foot down and actually say, okay, listen, there's now time to do something about this. We're going to figure out a solution. Right. So that is like, would you still in that situation continue giving to this person what you know that they probably want, which is another day of venting and commiseration? Or are you now still going to do what you're feeling like, you know what, now is the time and place. They are not going to like this. It's probably going to upset them, but it's better for them in the long run.
So if it's me personally, I'm going to commiserate because we all mourn differently. We all worry differently. But meanwhile, they're not going to ask. It's already been fixed.
You hear that, ladies? He's single.
It's just the way it is. Like, I see a problem. I recognize that we want to talk through this and we need to understand the problem, but I also know the solution. So I'm going to enact a solution once it gets to a point where it's inhibiting your ability to move forward properly. But I'm still going to allow you to commiserate. And if we want to commiserate until the cows come home, we can. But once you're looking up for air, you're going to realize that problem's gone. It's fixed. It's what I do. And yes, I am single for some reason. I'm single in this world. It's funny. I was just talking to my friend last night about, we were talking about how somehow we're both single. And it's like, I give amazing dating advice to my friends. I'm very quick. Most of my girlfriends, guy friends, y'all can screw off and figure it out. But like girls, they're waiting in this like ocean of like terrible men in this. St. Pete has a terrible dating scene, first off, but like they're dealing with like being ghosted and like being lied to and like all these things. And like, I give great advice, but somehow I'm still single. Apparently I just can't do it for myself.
I think that's most people. We always like see it for everybody else, but then, you know, obviously there's many more variables when it's actually you living through the experience. Let's talk about some setbacks on this journey. I know you had a couple big ones that I noted, like your shattered foot, which I'm sure was just literally like a heartbreaker given that you were walking everywhere at this point. So tell that story.
Yeah. So that first year I'd done my March Madness, done my 5K, got beat by a cow. I decided to just do a bunch of races. You know, accountability through volume. Get myself out there, spread myself, put myself in places where I have to go. I've paid money. I'm not going to waste that money. I started going to these 727 can races up in Dunedin and everything else. I did like brewery races and all this stuff. I was drinking a lot, but like still doing these races. And I was down from 503 to 423. I had lost 80 pounds from January to August. And I did this race in August on the beach. It was my fastest time ever. I did a 5K in 42 minutes. And I was cooking. I was running the last like third of a mile. I was able to really move and felt really good. And wanted to celebrate. These two amazing women in my apartment complex were like, hey, let's go out. So we went out, did some partying. A lot of it. I tell this story. I'm also very good at lying. And
maybe we now found that red flag. I'm just kidding.
Hey, I'm honest about lying, right? But I learned that if you want a lie to be true, you have to leave off details, because the more detailed you get, the more people believe you fabricated it. You have to repeat the lie enough where it becomes truth in your mind. Therefore, you're not really lying. You're believing the truth you've told. And then you have to reiterate it in different ways to different people, so each person has their own version of it, so that they can complete the lie for you without you having to tell the lie. Anyhow, I was embarrassed of my injury. And this is really the first time I'm talking about it. In reality, if you asked me 2 months ago, I would have told you that I went out and partied. Afterwards, I was waking up for a early run and I was excited and I ran and I slipped down the stairs and I shattered my foot. And then I went to the doctor and they told me it wasn't broken or urgent care. And then I went to the doctor and they scanned and said it was in fact shattered in two places and I tore my Lisfranc, which is super fun. But the reality of it is I don't know. I got dropped off by my friends and I woke up and my foot was swollen. And I can piece together some of it because I remember stairs. So in my mind, I will tell you that I slipped on the stairs and shattered my foot, but I actually don't know because I was too drunk. I was too high. And I don't remember what happened. I can assume what happened to my foot. And judging by how it broke, I'm smart enough to know it was like a rotational down the stairs type break. So it makes sense and the story works. So yeah, the truth is I shattered my foot and I don't know how. In the summer, I got rid of my car. So I'm car free, living in this apartment with a shattered foot. And the last thing I want is a surgery, because the last surgery a couple of years before had literally killed me. And I've only got two lives left. So don't want to burn it on a surgery this early, right? So I do a thing called couch surfing, which is like Airbnb, but it's free. And so these people come and stay with you. They share experiences. I've hosted about 250 people now through California, Austin, and now here.
Wait, it's like an actual website and people find you and they just want to sleep on your couch?
Yes, it's called Couchsurfing. There's an app and you can put up your profile and basically it's all review based. So people can write a review and you write a review of them and then...
How much does it cost to sleep on your couch for one night?
It's free.
So is it just like a way for you to meet new people and show them around town? Or is this like a sneaky way that you found online dating without actually having to download Tinder?
So this started because when I was in California, a whole different story about my money situation, but I couldn't travel as much as I used to travel and I was missing it. And so I wanted to let travelers come to me and bring their stories to me. So they would stay with me. So I hosted these two French women as my first group. And
you're like, sold. That's it. This is now my profession.
I loved it. And so by the end of California, I had 12 people every day requesting to stay with me.
I'm blown away that after the movie Taken, these women come and they don't think through, this man isn't even charging to have two French women sleep on his couch. And they're like, that's a great idea, America.
So to be fair, no one ever sleeps on my couch unless you absolutely need. I always keep an air mattress, and now I have a fold-out queen. So it's never actually, and in Austin, I had a whole bedroom with a queen. But, so it's never actually a couch. But for me, it's called couch surfing. Now, no money is involved. If anyone that offers to pay, they actually get kicked off the platform if you report it. It's a whole thing. By the end, I was hosting, I had my pick of the litter. I had people from every country. I have rules like, you know, I don't host Americans at the time. I don't host one night stays. I don't like more than seven nights stay. I have all these rules. Everyone has rules. But I was custom tailoring these tours. It's like one person told me he loved 90s movies. So I was in LA. So I took him to the LA River, where the famous scene from Terminator 2 where T-1000 drives the Mack truck off chasing Arnold and he's riding the motorcycle down the riverbed and shooting off the back of the dirt bike. Took him to that and we saw where that was, and I played the song from the movie. I took him to Nakatomi Plaza from Die Hard and we listened to the song and ate Twinkies. And
so is the expectation that you show them around?
The expectation is exactly what you put in your profile. So you can say, this is a couch. You can say, I don't want to host you if you don't eat with me. You can say there's someone who's like a nudist and he requires everyone to practice that. That's not me. But you can do whatever you want. It's your house and there's no money involved. So do whatever you want. When I was in St. Pete, I realized I can't stand up and make food because I just shattered my foot. My doctor told me to stay off it for 3 months. So what was I going to do? Well, in comes in St. Pete, the people that are couch surfing, they're actually looking to move here. So I've hosted now about 7-8 people who've moved to town, and they come, they stay with you for a week while they look for an apartment. It's always the same thing. They're all like, oh, I've got apartments I'm looking at. And you're like, oh, okay, we'll see how that plays out. And so I met this woman and I was like, look, here's the deal. I just shattered my foot. I'm going to offer you a deal here. I need someone. I'll buy the food. I'll pay for everything. I just need you to put it in the oven and I need you to put it on a plate and bring it to me. You don't have to pay for anything. You can stay in this house for free, which in St. Pete is very generous. And they were like, I'm good. They probably saw it as creepy because I just met her like 10 minutes before this. But she was like, I'm good. I'm going to find an apartment tomorrow. And I remember the next day I was sitting there. She comes in, like slams the door, and she's like, let's talk about that deal. Because apparently...
Wait, but is it not like they already reserve a week's worth of time with you? They can come and have it on like a day-to-day basis?
So you put in your request, whether it's 1 day, 2 day, 4 day, whatever it is, and I accept it. But then they can send another request if they want. So yeah. So I was like, look, you can stay here while you look for an apartment. And in return, help me. And so she did. She was a godsend. I feel like God gives us the people we need in our life. She left and another couch surfer came and stayed with me for a couple of weeks, who now is one of my better friends. She's got her home business. She's rocking and rolling in town. And if you want to look into your sexual health or your nutritional health, her name is Monica. She works over at Bionic Bloom, and she will help you explore the world of fungus if you're into that. Fun guy. So couch surfing, I did that, and they helped me with my injury. They literally helped with everything. So after 100 days of being in the boot, I came back at it. You know, 2022 was going to be my year. I was going to kick some ass and get back in it. I got in a bike, and this Zeiss bike that holds my weight. I started biking and working out all year. I started doing these races. I was doing tons of races, virtual races with my buddy up in Wisconsin, and loving life. I weighed in at 476. I had gone from 423 to 476 through the injury. And I was like, I'm going to kick ass this year. I'm going to get down. Joined Crunch, super toxic environment place that it is, but it was a gym. Met some great people there. I won't overlook that. Sarah Jane, the trainer, she's great. But at the end of the year, I weighed 475. I lost 1 pound in a whole year of... I tried veganism, I tried vegetarianism, I tried pescatarianism, I tried all these different diets, I tried all these different things, but nothing worked. it was frustrating beyond hell. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, there's gotta be something I can change. You know, we all like to commiserate. We all like to look and say, like, you know, in the dating world, guys will be like, all I want is a girl who is sweet and smart. And we all know that that's a lie. You want a girl who looks a certain way and does certain things, but we try and minimalize like our restrictions. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, I'm doing everything right. What's wrong? Meanwhile, in the corner of the room is this giant elephant called beer. And
I was going to say, you just need more steak and less beer.
So I'm sitting there and I'm like, whatever could I be doing wrong? And then I think about like the chug videos that I made where, if you're unfamiliar, you take a beer, you pour it into a glass, and then you drink it as quickly as possible. It's called beer chugging. I was in a beer chug league. I was the moderator of a beer chug league on Facebook. I was in a different beer chug league when I lived in Austin. I have been on multiple walls for my ability. I did an Irish car bomb in 2.6 seconds in Bahrain. I was on a wall for a week and then a Navy guy beat me. And here's the fun part. I'm drinking, a lot of people do it with like Bud Light. Well, I guess people don't drink Bud Light anymore, do they? Sorry. Coors Light. I was doing it with like triple IPAs, which are like 360 calories a pop. So when I'm drinking 16 of those or 12 of those in a night, that's like 6,000 calories or 5,000 calories. And it's not empty. It's very full and it's going to fill you up. And then I would order Taco Bell and drop another 2,000 calories. And then the next day I'd be at the gym like, why am I not losing weight? I'm doing everything right. I'm a pescatarian that eats well and, you know, just completely shutting this whole side of my life into a box. So I went back up to Jacksonville to my friends Heather and Andrew's place for New Year's because I was trying to figure out what I want to do for New Year's. I was like, I'm going to go to Jacksonville. We're going to do bougie dinner again, bougie New Year's. And Heather was like on point this year. She like made menus. Her friend's a graphic designer. We had like actual layout menus. We did these like sampling courses, multi-course meals, all this. And I talked to her and I was like, look, I think I'm going to do dry January after New Year's dinner. And we talked about it. And, you know, she's like, you know, you love beer. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, yeah, I just drove from St. Pete to Jacksonville, right? You drive up, you either go through Kissimmee Hell, through Orlando, or you go up through Gainesville, right? No. I drove down to the Everglades, over to Miami, through Doral, up through all the Treasure Coast, Space Coast, because I wanted to go to the breweries. I went to 41 breweries in 2 days. Because that's the weirdo I am.
And drunk drove.
Actually, I planned this because certain breweries sell low alcohol beers. Certain breweries sell root beers and they do to-go beers. And so I count the visit if I'm able to experience something they made and get a picture and talk to the people. And so I planned out so I didn't have to drunk drive. I would get to the point where I was there, drop my car off at the hotel, then start Ubering. So no, I did not. Not to say I haven't. Like, I will full-heartedly admit that I've been a terrible person in my driving, especially in college, but that is a huge thing. Driving mentally affected is wrong, and I made plans to not do that. I spent a lot of money on Uber, so I didn't have to drive drunk. I would plan hotels that were in the middle of the brewery, so I didn't have to drive drunk. But I spent a ton of money and I engulfed a lot of calories. But yeah, so that's literally, it was a driving force in my travel and in my life. And all this stuff was beer, was breweries, was this pursuit. I went to 1,414 breweries by January 1st, 2023. I loved it. It was part of who I was. I was on this app called Untappd. I went to all these beer events. I was the king of chugging beer. But it got me nothing but heartache, heartbreak, and doctors telling me I'm going to die again. So I talked to my friend Heather, and I was like, I think I'm going to do dry January. And she's one of my most supportive friends, love her to death. And she was like, all right, have you thought about the beer? Like, you love that. And I was like, I know. She listened. She very empathetic as well, like understood not just that that's a statement, but the meaning behind the statement. And we talked through it. So we did it. We had a bougie dinner. It was freaking amazing as expected. At midnight, I stopped drinking. I went to bed, I woke up, and I started dry January with the plan of I'm going to do dry January. And in February, it's my buddy's bachelor party. He's coming to St. Pete. So I'll have 7 weeks off. Then I'll be able to do bachelor party, Tampa Bay Beer Week, week one and week two, and then my birthday. And then I'll be able to evaluate, did I like sober or did I like being drunk? Which one's better and why? And actually look at it very scientifically. So I did 7 weeks of sobriety. Everyone does dry January. I did dry January and a half. And in the meanwhile, I found I still love this little game called Untapped, where it's this app you check into beers. You drink them, you tick them. It's called ticking. You get little badges like a Boy Scout. And I love it. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, I miss this game. Well, there's a shop that opened up called Urban Flow, and they sold non-alcoholic beer. And I kind of joked about it. I was like, oh, that's funny. I'll go as a joke. And it was actually phenomenal. I walked in and they had all these beers, and I met the owner and I was like, I'm going to buy these. Started going every other week, buying beers, ticking them off, buying new things, trying new things.
Oh, because the app also had non-alcoholic beer options. Yeah. Okay. That's good. My first thought was like, oh, good. You can make an app like that for workout challenges if you needed to fulfill that desire.
Actually, gamification is scientifically proven in a lot of different personality types to drive better results than not using gamification. Whether it's, think about your walk trackers, your walk challenges, your water challenges, your everything like that. Gamification is huge. And that's what I was addicted to. I was not addicted to alcohol. I was addicted to the gamification of alcohol, the ticking, the...
I noticed that with Duolingo for language learning too. It's really fun just to play the game.
Yep, it's all about that. We as humans want to compete. We want to tick things. So I looked at it after Beer Week, and there was an event in Beer Week. I spent a lot of money on it. I really appreciate the brewers for putting on this awesome event. I spent a ton of money, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I'm having the same exact conversation with the same exact people about the same exact thing, drinking the same beer. Why? And I had this little out-of-body step-out where I was like, why is this better than being sober? I'm spending thousands of dollars this week, and I'm going to have a terrible hangover. Why? So I stopped and I was like, I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm done with that. And I missed the game, but life goes on.
But now let's talk about setbacks through that. Have you experienced going to certain events where maybe you're like willing to consider it again? You have to have that conversation with yourself of like, remember, it's not worth it. Or you've like lost the taste for it. You've lost the interest. You now kind of are like a higher consciousness with it. With this, where you literally, it's just not even in your realm.
So there are a couple things. One, the gamification, I found fulfillment through Urban Flow. And I was able to tick new beers and try new things. The friend aspect was very sad. I didn't lose friends because they left me. I left them. They still wanted to drink. I did not. That is their choice. That is my choice. But I also didn't want to be around it because drinking a lot of beers generally means you're going to talk about a lot of beers, which I love talking about things, but not if I'm not participating. And so I needed to remove myself from that, which means I chose to walk away from those friends. I will reiterate, they did not walk away from me because of my choice. I walked away from them because I couldn't handle being in that situation and not being part of it. I don't like being left out. I like being part of things. So it wasn't that they ditched me, but I ditched them. And I was sad about that because these are friends I've made over the last 3-4 years.
Because it would almost require a little bit more willpower being in those environments, you think?
Yeah, that and selfishly, it was just not as fun. So I took that hit and I knew it was coming. And so I started thinking, how can I make new friends? And I met some through the races, some from Crunch and a lot from couch surfing. And one of my ultra friends who was a neighbor challenged me to do a triathlon and I laughed at him. And I signed up for the St. Anthony's Triathlon last year. Actually, this weekend is St. Anthony's again. So it was 1 year ago. And I was like, I'm going to do a triathlon. My fat ass is going to get in the water and swim. And then I'm going to get on a bike. And then I'm going to walk. And I'm going to do it. And it's going to suck, but I'm going to do it. And so I trained. I met a guy named Leo, OWS Leo. I asked him questions in this forum. And now he's my swim coach. I open water swim with him on the pier every week now. And so I met a community through that. I got out there and my sisters actually for my birthday decided they were going to, in March, they were going to come support me at the triathlon. So they all flew into town. We had a whole weekend in St. Pete, Tampa. I showed them around. It was an amazing time. Sadly, the weather did not cooperate and they canceled the swim part, which is actually my best part. So I was kind of mad at that. And they made it into a duathlon, but I completed it. I finished it. And I had, you got to realize, 1,400 breweries. It's a lot of breweries. That is a god-awful amount of breweries and money. And when you look at the grand scheme of things, what, have there been like 12 billion total humans in this whole planet ever? There's 7 billion humans now, so over time, let's just call it 15 billion humans. In that amount of time of history, I've been to more breweries than probably 0.0001% of all existing humans ever.
Yeah, that's wild. I've been to, I'm like trying to think, I'm like, I've been to like 23 and I lived in Denver.
And all of that, you would think the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. I should be proud of that, right? I did a triathlon that got canceled down to a duathlon. And I'm pretty sure I finished in the bottom 10. There are millions of people that finish triathlons faster than I do. I don't know how many people do triathlons around the world, but there are a lot of people that have done triathlons. I am nowhere special about this, but I had people reach out that I haven't talked to in 10 years and tell me that they're proud of me, tell me that I'm doing something. And I was like, I finished last. Meanwhile, in my head, I'm like, I've been to more breweries than you. But that doesn't matter. But like the fulfillment I got from like doing this and like hearing people be proud of me meant the world. And so like, I decided this could be me. This could be my thing. I could be the overweight triathlete, the fatthlete, as I like to call it.
I think it's amazing because, again, the energy that you have around these things that you're doing is that you're not looking to win. You're literally just looking to do. You're looking for the process, right? And I think that many people forget that life is literally about the process, right? That's the difference between instant gratification, delayed gratification. Instant gratification, you get the reward, but there's no journey. There's no work to get it. So you just get the dopamine hit and it's like a flash in the pan. Delayed gratification is literally about the journey. That's the longest part. That's where you go through all the ups and downs and the pain and the suffering and the, you know, the whirlwind of emotion. And then at the end, you get a reward, but it almost is not as rewarding because the journey in itself shaped you to a completely new person. And that is way more rewarding oftentimes than getting to that result. You like forget, oh crap, I'm actually working towards something, right? You get there and you're like more focused on everything that you've learned and who you've grown to be in that process. So I think that just it's such a great message here to be like, who gives a crap about winning or first place? No, it's like, no. I still like the amount of work that is put in to even be last in anything. It's like you still had to do the work. You still had to have the mental discipline, the physical discipline. You had to go through the ups and the downs and the pain and the turmoil and the physical pain and the mental fortitude required to actually do the thing, right? So it's like the work is the same for a winner or a loser. You're still both having to do the work, right? You're just starting at different stages, right? But you're still climbing the same steps in a sense. And so I just think that it's like a very, very powerful, you're giving it just through sharing this story, you're giving a lot of people permission, right? And it's something I'm reflecting on is like, just have the permission to do the thing because it's about the journey toward becoming the thing, not about if you're going to win it or lose it, because you still get to have the experience. And that's why we're here, to actually go have these experiences. The world is just a gym to shape your soul.
Exactly. And, you know, we in this gym of a world, which is a fun play on words because it's a gym and it's a gym with a Y and an E. We spend this time, we spend this effort, we have these goals. And if I had just stopped there, I could have always said, well, actually, I couldn't because it was a duathlon, not a triathlon, which really dug and ate at me because I'm a very technical person. So I actually signed up for the Fort DeSoto trilogy. I did two more triathlons because I was like, I need to be able to say I did a triathlon. I busted my ass this year. So I started, how can I get better? Started going to swim practice with Leo. Started going to the gym. Started biking more. Started walking more. And, you know, as an adult, in college, it's very easy to make friends. You literally are, it's designed to make friends. You sit down for your convocation and you're next to people that are like, hey, I'm new here too. Let's be friends. That's like your best friend. He's your best man in your wedding 12 years later. Like you sit down and you see a girl and y'all are now besties. You're having babies next to each other, whatever it is. Like it's so easy to make friends in college and in high school. Like even though those are hard times, we all go through hard, but you know what's really hard is being alone as an adult because now it's your money. You don't have to do anything. I can sit in my place with my cat and do nothing all day. And I'm a fully productive human because I have a job and I'm producing things and helping people. But that's not right. We need to get outside. COVID made it even worse. We were stuck inside for dumb pretenses, whatever you want to say. But we all, like, all of a sudden it's fully acceptable. I'm not leaving my apartment for 3 weeks. I'm going to order Instacart because that's safer. And it's like, the damage that was done, it was something like, what, millions of people basically contracted alcoholism because of COVID. Mine was made extremely worse. And so after all this, I'm at this triathlon with thousands of people. And then we all have a common goal. And I'm like, I can work with some of these people. I can meet these people at the swims, at the workouts. I went to Urban Flow to get a beer. I always do a shotgun after races. It's just one of my traditions. You poke a hole in the bottom, you suck all the beer out of it really quickly. So I went to Urban Flow to get some beers. And I was talking to Mike and Caitlin, and they're like, we want to sponsor you. And I was like, cool. No clue what that means. So I immediately reach out to my friend Whitney Dancaster, who's a sponsored ultra marathoner, one of the most badass women, one of the original badass women I met in the city. And I was like, what does this mean? And she was like, get it in writing, get it spoken out. Like, so I reached back out to Mike and he's like, I mean, I don't know. Let's talk about it. So it was a whole new thing. And now you'll see me in my Urban Flow shirts, these custom shirts that I get made through Yazam because they go up to 4Xs. And you've seen my shirts at gym with the ones with the wolf, the one with the peacock. I wear a lot of animals because it's funny. But I have these custom shirts now, and it's my thing, wearing bright colors, and I'm a sponsored athlete. I'm 40, and I'm a sponsored athlete, and it's so cool. I get to use my beer knowledge. We did a beer education class at Urban Flow. I've been to a couple of non-alcoholic brewery situations. I've done some non-alcoholic bar mocktails, and all of this has, so all that knowledge, it wasn't a waste. It's actually, now, how can I help people find sobriety? How can I help people find functionality from their drinks? So we focus on things that help your mind through lion's mane mushrooms, through, you know, herbs that help you sleep and rest, get magnesium. And then I was riding this high from getting sponsored and I was like, I want to keep this up. So I reached out to Rolling Oats, my favorite grocery store. And I was like, do y'all sponsor athletes? Just like,
they're like, sir, we sell eggs.
And sure enough, they responded, they're like, we don't. And I'm like, cool. And they're like, but what would you think it would look like? And I was like, oh, the door is open. And so I send a whole, I'm a project manager. So I send this whole outline of what it would look like to sponsor me as an athlete to, it turns out her name's Phoebe and she's amazing. And she was really busy and she gets back to me. She's like, actually, we like this. So they do the Rolling Oats 10K, which is part of St. Pete Run Fest in November. And she was like, the long and short, they created the Rolling Oats Running Ambassadors Program. And she was like, you know, you're going to be our first one. We're bringing in several people to do the run with us and to talk about us socially. And I was like, I can do this. This whole dream, I'm not making money, but I'm just paying up for the races that I'm doing. And so I was like, I can do this. This could be who I am. So I made a new shirt, which had my cat's face on it because my cat loves the bougie smoothies from Rolling Oats. And it had the Urban Flow logo. And I did the Rolling Oats race and I'm a sponsored athlete. So then I'm like, okay, how can I keep this ball rolling? So I'm starting to meet people. I'm starting to gain friends and like actually have this healthy balance. When I first moved to town, everyone says that St. Pete is the third most unchurched city in America. And I saw it. It would be raining and I'd be like, oh, I better go build my ark. And people would be like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, I grew up in a Christian elementary school, like Noah and the Ark. Like people know this story. Even if you're not a believer, you know about the Ark. It's just a thing. But people here thought I was crazy. I'd say things like, oh, I'm just going to part this like the Red Sea. People look at you like, what's the Red Sea? You're like, oh, you know, Moses. Never mind. So I really experienced that. There were good people here. But like in the service industry, I was working in a brewery, working in the industry, going to all these bars. I felt as an empath, I was absorbing all this dark energy of like people negative about not getting tipped, people mad that they're part-time, people mad about everything and just absorbing it all. And these are great humans, but we all go through different experiences. And I'm absorbing all of it like a filter. And it just made me a darker, sadder person. And giving up alcohol, removing that from my life, and putting people who have hopes and goals of athleticism and pushing themselves, my empathy, my empathic stuff started absorbing that and started being happier. And this year, I decided in August that was going to be my last beer. My buddy and I raised a beer to our new jobs. We cheered. I finished it. And I was like, that's going to be my last alcoholic drink. So I gave up alcohol August 25th. And I've been working towards this different life and started going back to church, trying to find my church. Started looking for friends in places that were similar to my journey. And that led me to this year joining, you know, one of my buddies for my birthday gave me class pass. And she was like, you should try out things. So I started going and went to your class. The first class pass class I went to was yours at Brickyard. And I, obviously beautiful women, but like these women actually had substance and the men were cool too. So I'm like, okay, I can do that. Well, then in February, the week of, was it Valentine's? Yeah. The week of Valentine's, I actually went to the first, I did a race at the beach. And afterwards, there was this beautiful girl, beautiful woman, who was getting her like leg wrap massage thing, that pressure, what's the Normatec or whatever. You put your legs in these compression sleeves. She was doing that. And I was like, that girl's really pretty. And I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. Not really think about it. I'm going to leave this race. So I left the beach and I get this message. And it was like, hey, I saw your Urban Flow shirt. I love Urban Flow. You should come to one of these run clubs. And I was like, that was the pretty girl that was getting her legs compressed. And I'm like, hell yeah. Whatever she wants, I'm going to go do. And she was like, we're doing a Gulfport Brewery running club for Fat Tuesday. Or there's Pinellas running club on Thursday. And I was like, I can't do that because I've started getting into raw milk and my pickup is on Tuesdays. And it's super sketchy. You like pay cash and you pick up milk out of the back of a car on the side of the street. But
wait, I need a new hookup. My place is not doing it for me because I found out they're not grass fed.
Well, shout out to Dancing Goat Farms. You can either drive up to Oldsmar or you can meet them on 3rd Street. They do every other week. You pick up your milk. They do goat cheese. They do guinea fowl eggs.
Oh my God, this is amazing. Okay, great. I literally need all this information. I will be meeting them on whatever street corner, on whatever 5 p.m. on Tuesdays. I love it.
And keep in mind that this milk is only for pet consumption because my cat needs the bougiest milk possible. So this milk, I couldn't go on Tuesday because I had to pick up my milk. So I decided to go on Thursday to Pinellas Run Club at Green Bench Brewing. I was like, I know Green Bench. I used to work there. And I read it and it was like 6 o'clock. So I'm like, okay, I'll get there right around six, you know, whatever. So I'm driving there. I park. Green Bench is terrible for parking. It's super busy. And I'm like walking up, rereading the email. It's like, we leave promptly at six. And I'm like, crap, I'm late. First day, great impression. I get there. Turns out they were doing some shoe expo. So I wasn't that late. And I do this run. Well, turns out I'm walking because I don't run. And the Pinellas Run Club, a lot of run clubs say all pace is welcome. But really what they mean, as long as you're running like a faster than a 13-minute mile, your pace is welcome. Pinellas Run Club was different. Brandy, the head of Pinellas Run Club, this awesome girl that I had met at Lita's Jungle a couple weeks before, who I saw her Hokas and asked her if she was in a run club, and she invited me to Pinellas Run Club, but I didn't come to. She's the leader of it. She decided to walk with me, so I didn't have to walk alone, which was awesome. So I'm meeting these great people who are in this group, and I'm walking. And so I started doing this walk with them. And that day I met a couple other people. The next week I met a couple more people. I look at this one girl's neck and she's wearing a cross. And I'm like, that's weird. In St. Pete, you're wearing a cross? Like, no one does that here. Like, I have mine in my drawer. And so I ask her, she's like, yeah, I go to church. And the other girl I'm talking to, we are now the gaggle, Brittany, Cassie, and me. We call ourselves the gaggle because everywhere Brittany goes, a whole gaggle of geese follow her around, really just a bunch of dudes trying to hit on her. But we're now best friends because we're going to church together. Like, this exists, but no one talks about it. Like in Memphis, everyone knows about church. Everyone talks about it. And then I'm like talking to Brandy, they go to church. I'm talking to them, they go to church. Turns out everyone there goes to church. And so it's this whole difference in mind shift of these people who I like to say it's like jumpstarting my car battery with a lightning bolt. It's huge. I've been on this energy kick for the last like two months now because I'm around these people and I'm absorbing this energy. And so, yes, it was hard. I've had to put myself out there. I had to literally go to multiple run clubs, to races, to different gyms, to stop going to bars, to different hobbies, raw milk buying in the alleyways and talking about carnivore diets and eating liver with people, all these things. Like, I've changed a lot of my life, but through that, I've found a group of people that recharge me, that challenge me, that push me to be a better version of me. And it has been very hard. It has been life-changing, quite literally, but it fit in the change that I was looking for. I was trying to be better. I'm trying to lose weight so I don't die again. I'm trying to give this life to my cat who deserves the world and all the raw milk. But I found that through making myself uncomfortable, but I like the uncomfortable. It's the same thing, like I said earlier, looking over the edge of somewhere really tall terrifies the crap out of me, but I love it because it's what makes me want to keep doing it.
I think the community piece is so important. I've heard a lot of people mention that about, I guess, because I'm so plugged into the gym space, but it's where more of the personal growth oriented people go. And so they are typically looking to not only get healthier physically. I think there's a misconception about they just want to like look good, right? But it's very much, no, they want to be surrounded by like-minded individuals who just want more for themselves and who have a little bit of a mental illness of like being like finding comfort in like the most uncomfortable situations, right? Like putting yourself through pain and discomfort in order to then be able to endure the hardships of life. I think that's like the greatest way to view some of those classes at Brickyard or even CrossFit gyms, right? Like go do something really hard and then the rest of your day will be cake, right? And that is typically where you can find this community. And so I think it's awesome that then that is where you also found yourself plugged into the church community as well. Cause yeah, Brickyard's big on that. So, okay. We have gone on for quite some time and I know you have somewhere to be in like 20 minutes. So, I want to wrap this up and maybe we'll have you back on in the future. Cause we've like literally only scratched the surface of everything we were going to talk about. So, I want to just ask my final closing question. What is a current growing pain that you are experiencing in your life?
Well, you asked that question as I'm sitting here with my foot, hoping that the pain goes away before the triathlon this weekend and my knee and everything else, because it's taper week. But true growing pain is the fact that as a large person, this is not unique to us. This is skinny people experience this as well. You get called skinny, eat a cheeseburger, all this stuff. You get called skinny mini and beanpole and things like that. Size is the one area that's still allowed to be ridiculed in society. People are pushing back now, I think improperly a lot of ways, but like you can no longer make fun of someone for being a woman, for being a skin color, for being an orientation, but like, go ahead, make fun of that person for being fat. Like, you want something funny, put a big person and have them slip out of a chair. It's hilarious. Like a lot of our comedy in our society is still based on that. Image identity is huge. People make billions off of it. Companies literally put magazines out, like focusing on insecurities of girls and boys. It's huge. Growing pain for me is the fact that that's always going to be there. I may be 60 pounds down or however many, 73 pounds down, 75 pounds down from my original weight. But in my mind, I'm still a fat tub. I'm still the big dude in the room. I'm still always going to internalize any comment that comes to me with that lens. It happens a lot. You know, there's the girl, there's in movies, you see the girl who was fat. She loses all the weight. Now she's hot, but she doesn't believe she's really hot because in her mind, she's still fat, which is a whole nother weird thing that our society has pushed that you can't be hot and fat, whatever. But for me, it comes because people look at me right now and they'll say, oh, you've probably lost so much weight. I love it. And in my head, I'm like, in the past 5 weeks, I've lost 1 pound. I haven't lost weight. I'm a freaking failure. And that's what just goes to my head. And this person was meaning positivity. They were trying to share a compliment and make me feel good. But I've internalized it and I make it a problem. I make it a problem. What they said is good. What I feel is bad. And so my growing pain is trying to realize that I am a better version of myself, not in a cocky way, but just knowing that like I've improved. And like people that haven't seen me in 3 months, when they see me now, they're like, wow, you look a lot better. In my head, I take that as like, I actually feel like garbage. My foot hurts. My knee hurts. I had to skip workouts today. I ate a pizza last week. But in their mind, they're like, this guy's doing well. And I need the ability to let yourself be complimented is something I struggle with. I do not take them well. I love giving compliments. I love gifting people with words that matter and really digging into the heart of the matter. But I am so freaking terrible at hearing anything positive about myself. I like doing good things and walking away. And people think, oh, this is nice. I wonder what happened. And I'm like, yeah, I did that. I don't want people to tell me about it. I don't want people to talk about it. I just want to do the thing. And so, yeah, that's my growing pain is recognizing my progress, not only in my own mind, but hearing compliments from others and receiving them without the negative connotation that I'm going to put on them.
Well, it must also be tough because you're looking for a physical change to be the representation of your progress. So the other things are like intangible, right? We can't like hold them in our hands. You can't hold your growth in your hands. But I guess that the thing that would help is still approaching it like a progress picture of your life, right? So like, where did friendships start? Where are they now? Where did self-worth start? Where is it now? Where did habits start? Where are they now? You know, and being able to step back and really see it from the macro, because when you're really just in it and you're just focusing on the day to day, it's really hard to see the progress, that upward trajectory of that line, you know. But then as soon as you step back and you compare it to 5 years ago in a very tangible way, like I said, like look at how you felt in social interactions then versus how you feel in social interactions now. How you felt going to a gym then versus how you feel going to a gym now. Once we kind of break it down like that, I think that's when we can have a little bit more appreciation for the growth that isn't necessarily as tangible as a physical result.
I completely agree. Looking at it that way, I clearly have made strides. I know I have. I used to be able to, I was talking to my friend about this last night. I used to be able to house a dozen donuts, no question, just go get them, eat them, keep going. Now, I tried a donut the other day and like, I can't. Things have changed in my life. I really love the changes. And I'll give a quick shout out. I know we're done here, but I do want to give a shout to the people that have helped me. You being one of them, first off, and Daniel at Brickyard for putting that place together. It's a great gym. But if you are looking for something, Bars and Bells at Brickyard, specifically with Roro, it's not CrossFit. So don't be scared about that. It's not like crazy running where you have to like hold your partner on your back and go rucking. They do that, but not on Tuesday, Thursday. Go check out Bars and Bells, specifically with Romana, but anyone else. There are a lot of great trainers there. To Pinellas Run Club, Brandy has put together this amazing group of people that are positive, that want you to be there. They don't want to just say they want you there. They actually want you there. Urban Flow, a group that helps so many give up alcohol, this poison that we ingest thinking, oh, one drink doesn't hurt me. It does hurt you. Very, very plainly, one drink will hurt you. Cutting it out will be better. I want to be very clear about that. You can drink all you want. That's your choice, but it's not good for you. And places like Urban Flow, the only non-alcoholic bottle shop in Florida, it supports people changing their life. People like Leo Brasino, who goes out every Sunday and swims with people that he doesn't know and that he's never met. He helps them at the pier with Cheryl, who goes out in a kayak and keeps us from being hit by boats and sharks. Then you have these people like Matt Scarbo putting together these bike races and helping with these triathlons. You have people like Coral, who's putting together an all-ladies triathlon. These people inspire me. They make me want to be better and push, because there are people like that that exist. And if I can help, then I'm going to be one of those people to someone else. So cheers to y'all, and thank you.
Amazing. Thank you so, so much. This has been such an awesome conversation. I really liked sometimes having guests on, you know, I have to be a little bit of an empath there and figure out like how to play the game. Will this person, you know, am I trying to pull teeth or will they give it to me? And a lot of these things you just went on and said without me even having to prompt it, which was amazing because you like the way you segued into things was great. So thank you so much for making the time. I'm sure that this episode will resonate with a lot of people and provide some value. And yeah, so that is it.
Everyone, you should try to grow with Roro.